This is KUT. I'm Jennifer Staten. There's been a lot of talk nationally and in Texas about guns and gun regulation. A less prominent part of that discussion has been about suicide. Firearms are the most common method of suicide. In 2013, 58% of suicide deaths for all ages in Texas happened by firearms. I wanted to find out how the suicide prevention community sees itself fitting into the discussion about guns. I put that question to Marilee Keller. She's a program director for Mental Health America of Texas Suicide Project. I started the discussion by asking her how she got involved in this work.
I have been involved in suicide prevention for the past 15 years, since our youngest son died by suicide in November 2000, and I was at the University of Texas working on a master's in public health at the time, and my advisors suggested that I get involved with Mental Health America of Texas, and so I have been involved with Mental Health America of Texas for the past 15 years.
Thank you for sharing that, Marilee, and we're sorry for your loss. I'd like to set our discussion in some context, and I want to do that by talking about data, first of all. Can you give us the most recent data for how many suicides were completed in Travis County?
I'm going to give you data from 2009 to 2013, because we try to look at suicide in terms of trends. So for all ages in Texas, for 2009 to 2013, we had 14,579 deaths for a rate. And we talk about suicide in terms of rate so that we can compare it to one area to another. And the rate was 11.6 per 100,000 population. For Travis County, during that same time period, 2009 to 2013, the rate was 12.1. So in this case, Travis County overall was slightly higher than Texas in suicide deaths.
And I'd like also to ask about methods for completed suicides. What is the method that is most often used?
Firearms are the method that is most often used because it is the most lethal. And in Texas in 2013, 58% of the suicide deaths were deaths by firearm. 23% were by suffocation, 12% by poisoning, which might include drugs or medication, and 7% other. So that 58% by firearms compares with the U.S. rate for all ages of 52% by firearms. So again, we're slightly higher in Texas.
But it's clear from the data, both for Texas and nationally, that firearms is far and away the most common method for completed suicide.
It's the most common method for completed. And again, it's the most lethal.
Given the data that we've been hearing about and the prevalence of firearms in completed suicides, how does the suicide prevention community see itself fitting into the larger discussion that's been going on nationally about guns?
I can't speak for all the suicide prevention community, but I can speak for the Texas Suicide Prevention Council, which is supported by Mental Health America of Texas, and it includes over 50 local suicide coalitions and statewide organizations. We take the position that suicide prevention and the whole discussion about firearms really should be a discussion of public health and injury prevention. So we do not get into the Second Amendment rights issue, because that is not something that we want to get involved in. Our approach would work wherever you are on the Second Amendment rights. It works for everyone. And it is an approach, we call it Counseling on Access to Lethal Means, or CALM.
And tell us then what CALM entails. What does that mean?
You can't remove all risk factors from your home, But you can make your home suicide safer by talking to your loved ones who might be at risk for suicide and by securing easy access to things that kill. So if you're concerned that somebody at your home is at risk of suicide, a depressed teen, a 20-something going through a breakup, an adult with a financial or a family crisis or a divorce, or someone with a mental health or substance abuse problem, they need increased support for family and friends. They need access to mental health services, but they also need a home environment where easy access to lethal means is not readily available. Lock your guns up. Lock up your firearms. Personally, I am a firearm owner, and I can tell you that all of our firearms are securely locked up with the firearm separate from the ammunition. Ideally, if somebody is at high risk, you would remove firearms temporarily. This doesn't have to be permanently, but temporarily until that high risk time is over. In Texas, it's unlawful to store, transport, or abandon an unsecured firearm in a place where children are likely to be and can obtain easy access to that firearm.
And I think that definition of children means under 17, I believe. So that would cover teen years also.
It definitely will. It's again, to restate it in a different way, it's against the law to allow a child under 17 unsupervised access to a loaded firearm.
Another thing I saw in some of the prevention materials that talked about creating that safer environment was the idea of simply reaching out to someone and saying, a trusted friend or a family member who lives elsewhere, and ask them, you know, can I please store these with you, these firearms, for a while out of my house? And even so much as drawing up a letter of agreement between the two parties to create that as a situation to help with that safer environment.
Jennifer, you're so right. And we actually have a Suicide Safer Home app that you can go to that will take you through these steps and that will have a sample letter. To download the app, search Suicide Safer Home. Right now it is available for iPhone users. We will have it for Android in the future.
So Marilee, I think it's always so important when we're talking about anything related to suicide and suicide prevention. Can you remind us what the signs are that we can look for if we think that someone in our life, a family member, a friend, a coworker, might be suicidal?
I'm going to talk about risk factors first. Risk factors are underlying things that might lead somebody to be more at risk for suicide. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to attempt or complete, but that they are, have a higher risk. And so that would be things like a family history of suicide, a history of mental disorders, particularly clinical depression. And there are some studies that show 90% of those who die by suicide have an underlying mental health or substance abuse condition. Impulsive or aggressive tendency, isolation, physical illness, or a previous suicide attempt. But I want to point out that we also talk about hope, because hope is a protective factor. So anything that can instill hope in someone's life will make a huge difference. And that can be as simple as thinking about connections, connections to family, connections to friend, connections to community.
There was something in the prevention materials that you had shared with me that I wanted to ask you about. You noted the following: most suicidal people are undecided about choosing death versus choosing life. Can you explain further what you mean by that?
There's some ambivalence about suicide. So one of the most important things is to always, if you think someone's thinking about suicide, to ask. Are you considering taking your life? Are you thinking about suicide? Do you want to die? Ask that question. By asking that question, you're letting them know that you hear them. And then you can find out more in terms of whether they have a plan, whether they have access to means, which we've been talking about. And always share the 1-800-273-TALK, the 1-800-273-8255 line. In terms of ambivalence, The studies that have been done with people who have attempted suicide and lived show that, for instance, a number of people who have jumped and lived have said the moment they jumped, they thought, I don't want to die. I want to live. So we want to connect those people with that part of them that wants to live. And again, we're talking about protective factors here.
That is sobering, Marilee. The moment they jumped, they instantly thought, I don't want to be jumping now.
Yeah.
It sounds like that when asking these questions, we have to be that blunt and straightforward. Those questions that you cited, you know, do you want to die? Are you thinking of committing suicide? We need to be that forward and specific.
If you're not comfortable talking about it, they're not going to be comfortable talking about it. And you've got to talk about it to prevent it.
So I'm wondering if you can walk us through a scenario or give us an example of a time when one of these methods for making an environment safer, kind of what that looks like.
You know, in thinking about that, my husband and I are both suicide prevention gatekeepers. We both do gatekeeper training. I do training around the state. But until I worked on the Suicide Safer Home app and work with the folks at Harvard Means Matter to really think about access to lethal means when somebody's at high risk, I had asked people if they had thought about suicide. I'd never ask them about securing their access to means until I was sitting with my husband with some good friends. And one of them shared that because of the life circumstances they were in right then, there were family circumstances, there were financial circumstances, and an overwhelming sense of outside environmental pressures. Because of those pressures, this friend shared with me that he had had thoughts of suicide the previous week. It kind of overwhelmed me. And then I thought, I have to do what I tell other people to do. I knew these individuals fairly well. I knew that he not only was a firearm owner, but was a firearm enthusiast, and that he carried a firearm with him all the time. And so I'm just going to call him John. So I said, John, you know, first of all, you know I care. And you know the work I do in suicide prevention, so I'm going to assume that you're asking for help. And I want you to know that my husband and I are going to work with you and with your wife to get you help. But I also want you to be here so that you can use that help. In order for you to be here, can you just temporarily give me the gun that I know you carry with you? And I promise to give it back to you after you've had counseling, but just right now while you're at high risk, would you be comfortable letting us secure it for you? And you know, I was amazed. He said yes. And we secured the firearm, and then we worked with his wife to secure other firearms that we knew he had in his house. He got counseling. He's here. He's a vital part of the community. He and his wife enjoy their grandkids. He's alive.
One of the things I'm really hearing in a lot of this information and these answers are that we all need to get more comfortable than I think as a society. We are talking about all of these issues, that it's okay to ask for help, that it's okay to reach out and show that we care, that it's okay to do that. I think for a lot of people, that makes them uncomfortable.
You know, it does. But when I was growing up, we didn't talk about sex the way that we do now. You know, we're comfortable about talking about that now. I like to say that suicide's the new S word. We need to be comfortable talking about it, and we need to have communities that are communities of hope.
Marilee Keller is Program Director for Mental Health America of Texas Suicide Project. She's a master trainer who does trainings all across the state. And Marilee, we thank you so much for your time and for sharing all this information with us.
Thank you, Jennifer.
A reminder again about those suicide prevention resources. The phone number is 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. The website is TexasSuicidePrevention.org. That's TexasSuicidePrevention.org. There's also an app available for iPhones. You can search Suicide Safer Home. I'm Jennifer Staten, KUT News.